Hi, I'm Sophie, Marketplace Risks AI Assistant. Welcome to Series 9 of the Platform Podcast, hosted by Marketplace Risk founder Jeremy Gottschalk. The Platform Podcast features marketplace and digital platform founders and leaders sharing valuable lessons that can be leveraged to help you successfully launch and grow. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not professional advice. For specific issues, please seek an appropriate professional or contact us at info@marketplacerisk.com for a referral.
Welcome to the Platform Podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Ryan Stevens, who's the VP of Marketplace Strategy at Clutch, a global B2B marketplace of service providers. Today, we're going to be talking all about running lean teams and operational efficiencies. Ryan, it's great to have you.
Great to be here.
So I want to get into your journey at Clutch, but before we do, I was hoping you could talk a little bit about Clutch and the market it serves and kind of what it is exactly.
Sure. So Clutch is a B2B services marketplace for professional services. So think Yelp, but for B2B services like accounting, like web development, like marketing or advertising services. We rate, review, and verify service providers in those segments. We are a platform that largely provides advertising to these service providers. So service providers can come to us, pay for advertising, and they receive more visibility on our platform.
Got it. And as I understand it, so you joined Clutch as employee number 5. I think as you described it, as a entry-level employee who assumed the jack-of-all-trades role. Tell me, wind the clock back and tell me what that was like.
Sure. Flashback to 2013, 2014. I really wanted to work for a startup, and I'm putting quotation marks around that. I had in my mind that I wanted to work for the Ubers of the world or Groupon, Living Social, other companies that we may have not heard of for a while. But what I found was a 5-person company that was working out of a sort of non-name brand co-working space in Washington, D.C., but had a really, really pragmatic founder that had a clear vision on what he wanted to build. Joining the 5-person team, I was in my early 20s, so I didn't have a huge concept of what a startup would feel like realistically, but it. It was 5 people sitting in a 12 by 12 room, day in, day out, kind of doing whatever job was needed. Primarily that was business development. So reaching out to, service providers to, encourage them to collect reviews on our platform. But that slowly evolved as we were able to, solve that chicken and egg problem of getting service providers on the platform, collecting reviews, creating visibility, attracting other service providers.
I think that what's interesting about that is, it's obviously early on in your career and you have to play many roles, which means you get to learn many roles. Because I see so many people, I worked in a startup or also in a law firm, and in both cases, when they got bigger, or in the case of my second law firm was already huge, people were segmented or siloed or pigeonholed, however you want to describe it, to the point that they didn't understand other areas of the business. And so I think that's super cool that you got that, especially early on in your career. But fast forward to today, Clutch has 200 employees. Talk to me about the growth and, you talked about 50% margin. I mean, that's nothing to shy away from. So what is this 10-year journey for that company meant? And what are those key attributes do you think that enabled that growth and those amazing margins, obviously?
Yeah, no, well, let me say the margins and growth rate were a little bit lost on me earlier on in my career. So, I mean, it's been as my I become more familiar with the market, we're really also a fortunate company. One of the things we often used to say is like, better be lucky than good, but best to be both.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll speak to the margins and growth shortly, but I actually want to jump back to the question on jack of all trades and just highlight what has led to such lean margins is we had a founder who was a little bit, I would say late stage career, but mid to late stage career. But, you know, he had a clear vision. He's an engineer by trade. And so he was heavily focused on building the product, developing how we would kind of add value into a world in a way that was different or unique. But what, you know, what he would do from a staffing perspective would be hire younger, or let me say, lower tenured professionals that were willing to work hard, work for not a whole lot of money, right. At least at this moment in time, and kind of smart enough to figure it out, right? So you mentioned that in bigger companies or in sort of other startups, you get people who silo or are blind to what's happening in other parts of the org or organization. In this case, you had people who were kind of sort of the opposite of what you would expect, you know, making little money, but interested in taking on more and more work and learning. And so, and that lasted for years throughout our early days, so that, you know, it wasn't just me that was a jack of all trade, you know, everybody that joined the company, you know, into 20, you know, 25 people, maybe even 30, had a jack of all trade vibe where they were doing more than just one specific role or task. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's amazing that, I mean, that you have a team of people who get shit done, you know, not focused on this is my area only, but understanding the entire business. And we used to say, you know, get shit done. Like, it doesn't matter what your title is. It doesn't matter what today was supposed to look like. Just get stuff done. And it's hard to find a lot of those people. So that, I think that's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, I look back at our hiring process, right? And in some cases, you know, I'm like, oh my goodness, maybe it was like the, you know, one-eyed man, you know, leading the blind. But, you know, you had a really motivated group of professionals, mostly early in their career, that were given this sort of power of selecting who else was joining their organization that they, you know, felt pretty proud of, right? And so we had a pretty rigorous selection process to, you know, get into the company, the organization, right? You're looking for people who, we have a value that's, you know, we are builders, right? And that was a topic of conversation in, you know, nearly every interview that we had of, you know, people say they like to do a lot of things and that they're okay with change. But as soon as change comes, everybody's mad and frustrated.
Right.
And finding people who, you know, were actually driven by the disruption that, you know, change in job responsibilities or task or reporting lines was a big part of our interviewing process. And so it's certainly harder to do that in a company that is, you know, I think over 50, 60 people, when there are some things that just need to be specialized, but mm-hmm. we kept this lean, but jack of all trades staffing approach for a long time.
And so that means that, I mean, let me ask you the question. Does that mean that everybody, I guess, until what point, until what employee count, but does that mean that everybody kind of participated in the interview process? So before someone came on, it was like you had to go through the Clutch gauntlet?
Yeah. So I sat, when I interviewed, I sat in front of the four other employees at Clutch. We, you know, one of the things that was instilled in us by our founder is like, hey, like the figure it out, the, you know, get stuff done mentality. And it's like, you can go read on interviewing best practices and, you know, and HR best practices. And then we got smart that, yeah, it's probably not a great experience to keep sitting, you know, 1-on-4, 1-on-5, 1-on-6, right, in interview structures. But we did take an approach where the, you know, the interview days looked somewhat like you'd see in some of the, you know, kind of super interview days of consulting or banking, where you're meeting with, you know, six teammates plus the founder. Right. And wow, that is like the, I think the kicker there is that the founder was interviewing people up until, you know, probably 40, 50, entry level, to mid level, teammates. And so he eventually rolled off, but I think that founder involvement until, you know, 40, 50 was key here. But sure, yeah, you had, you know, new people to the organization involved in the recruiting process, and you had the old timers. So, right, you had people that did office tours and coffee dates and greeting, and that sort of big involvement of the team, I think, also drove engagement from teammates back into the company, right? Building this culture of I had a say or part of, you know, bringing somebody else into the company.
Sure. And I suppose there's some amount of responsibility and kind of connection. And so that, you know, you want people in that you're, you want to work with, but also, you know, you have more of a, I'm trying to think of the word, but kind of a responsibility, an obligation to participate in the process, meaningfully engage with these people meaningfully, but also then you want them to succeed once they're in, because you were part of bringing them in, right?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And, you know, and you almost have a horse in the race, a bigger horse in the race,
right,
or more horse in the race, because, you know, you're, you know, something that you picked up on in their interview, that really, you know, drove you to pull them in. You ultimately are, trying to help others, in the org see it. And so, yeah, you really get this, I think, sense of early attachment to somebody that you may or may not really know all that well,
sure,
but an investment, to your point, in their success within the organization.
So you talked about the leadership team being really small, essentially, you know, 3-person leadership team, the organization being bootstrapped, until taking outside funding, kind of some of these things that I would argue kind of define a lean organization. But I want to drill down on these because I think they're really important for early stage companies to think about, right? You're talking about operating a lean company, which is kind of unique in the startup venture world. Over my career, it seems that bootstrapping has been the exception, not the rule, or even the goal. I mean, oftentimes I feel like so many startups, their end goal is to get funding, when I think funding is a means to an end. And if you can bootstrap, you bootstrap. And when money is raised, I've seen it over and over and over. The teams get bloated really quickly. But that didn't happen here. And I'm curious kind of why not.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to ship this podcast over to our founder, because I mean, it sounds like I idolize him, but I do, I guess. But, but right, the founder had a hyper focus on product-led growth, right? And so, you know, building something of value that is cool, that people like, you know, right? He didn't set out to be the biggest unicorn the world has ever seen. No, the goal was to build something of value that, you know, helped improve the market, right? And so this hyper focus on delivering value into the market, you know, but through product-led growth, right? And so the first round of funding that we took on was primarily, if not solely, to de-risk him. You know, this was, we were, when we took on our first round of funding, it was 2020, you know, I would say, you know, a week before the world shut down. So again, this is back to being, you know, lucky over good. But we took it primarily to de-risk him, his, you know, his investment. You know, he has a family, you know, again, mid to later career, and he was working, you know, working at a startup, still long days, long weekends,
right?
And so we were growing, 50% year over year. A business that way doesn't necessarily need to take on money, and so the bloating didn't happen because the focus was, I think, on building a great product. We had a strong and lean team in place. But I think what happens, and what you often see happening with investment, and why that bloating takes place, is there tends to be a shift to, you know, sales and marketing led growth with, mm-hmm. with that investment, right? And it takes a lot of salespeople and a lot of marketers to show ROI, and mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of the bloating happens, and that wasn't the route that we took after our initial round of funding.
That's great. And I guess when you're already kind of executing and performing, and everybody's, you know, firing on all cylinders, you know, they're maybe you know tweak here and there, but it's not, you don't have the need for entire revamps or entirely new teams or adding so much headcount. But I mean, I think that you're right. It tends to be the growth at all costs. How do we do that? Sales, marketing, let's just throw fuel into the fire. And then when they realize that the product is lagging severely, and now we got to go replatform, and it's like this endless cycle. But what I want to talk about is kind of your viewpoint and kind of how you define what a lean organization looks like and how it operates.
Of course, I think sort of a primary principle or thing that I think about as, you know, a lean operator and what a lean business looks like is sort of this idea or mentality that everybody acts as a founder, right? And, you know, and small anecdote that I think has, you know, kind of stuck with me, but I remember being, you know, given the company card. And let me say, the company card was the founder's personal card that he used for company expenses.
Right.
And so it says his name, you know, his name on it. Right. But, you know, it's like, you know, it was to take the team out for a goodbye happy hour that he wasn't, you know, going to. And it's like, yeah, just spend as if it were yours. And I was like, well, for me, is this happy hour going? How long is this happy hour going? You know,
right. How many,
you know, 2 hours? So, right. You know, but to me that said, hey, like everybody got, you know, a drink or two and then, you know, close it down. But it was pretty early on in my Clutch tenure that I got this company card. I didn't know him, for very long, him being the founder for very long at this point, but it was just like this, like, okay, got it. Like, treat this money like it's yours. Like, we're all in this together. And if you can build that sort of sense throughout an organization, you then are able to, you know, get people to, you know, truly work as a team, you know, do things outside of, you know, the role description that they signed up for, right? Like, there's always that bullet point on the end of role descriptions as, you know, something along the lines of, you know, and other activities as required or other tasks as required, right? And that was actually the majority of people's role. Right. You know, while it was one bullet point, it was actually the most important bullet point for us. Right. And we were able to kind of drive that culture for a really long time. But I think it all stems back to this idea of like thinking like a founder, thinking like an owner of the business, and then driving that sense of teamwork. It takes a village mindset that helps, you know, helps a company build lean, right? And it's, if you think about it, it's, you know, mission driven. It's strong corporate or company values that allow people to sort of operate or work that way. As soon as mindsets shift that, hey, this is my department, this is my role, I only do this, it starts to really, really challenge any operator, any leadership team's ability to run lean.
Yeah. The territorialism or nature of a startup, but also like, you know, the when the fundraising happens and it's like this newfound money and some kind of newfound power and silliness like that. You know, it's funny because the credit card story is funny because I had, I would say, the opposite experience. We just raised a bunch of money, ended up doing an offsite in Miami. This is the CEO who planned this, had our, I guess, PR creative director team all out to dinner at Nobu, and ordering bottles at, you know, individually. Our VCs listening to this will probably die, but, and the CEO said, just take care of the bill and, you know, you can reimburse it, you can expense it later. And needless to say, it's probably to this day the most expensive restaurant bill I've ever paid for in my entire life. And if you've ever been to Nobu, like, you'd know why, but it's like, it was something I was like, this is, wow. Okay. I mean, when I was in the law firm, like, you only spent money if you could expense it. And then of course you had to justify it to a client. So you just didn't spend money. So anyway, completely different experience, but I see, you know, certainly running my own company, see that kind of treat it as it's your own, I think is a really good kind of mantra. And
it's, you know, so important.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. It's so important, right? I mean, this guy, Rich, you know, just has the means, but frugal, right? And it is a value of his that I want to embody, you know? Right, like, money hits my pocket, I'm like, let's spend it, you know. Right. But it's really it's this approach to, you know, not just his business but his personal life of frugality, right? It's like, do more with less, and right, like, so yeah, there was never bottle service. Is nice rest, you know, nice restaurants. What, the food down the street is just as good, Ryan? Right. There's a popular salad restaurant that I really like. I couldn't walk in with that salad, that, you know, without, that's a, you really want, that's a $15 salad, Ryan, right? You know, like, and I'm like, every time trying to hide the salad from my boss, because
putting your Starbucks in a McDonald's cup.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So, but it's that sort of, you know, you see the founder, CEO, you know, acting that way, and it gives you something to mirror or understand what is allowed in this culture, right? And then therefore, you know, you have me who's going and say, oh, got it, like, table service is not allowed in this culture, and right, and then you get your junior managers and to act that way when they're taking the company card out. But it starts at the top.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. Number one, I think what you're talking about is modeling, right? You're modeling the behavior for others. Obviously, the founder of the company sets the tone, then you model the behavior, and that's how a culture is created. I think that it's obviously easier to follow modeled behavior in a successful company because you see it or you associate it with the success. So, you know, I think that witnessing a frugal boss or a frugal founder and a bootstrap company and a successful one, by the way, is kind of a good recipe to model for your own career, right? Because it works. It at least worked in this scenario, and I think that my personal perspective is that works. That works generally. It's a really good formula, and bottle service doesn't really ever lead to success. But that's for another day. The other thing I think is really interesting is, in many ways, when I think about CEOs, COOs that I've worked with, they have this mentality, right? This ability to get stuff done, this ability to be utility players. They've experienced all of these different functional areas. You know, obviously they deal with change. They're curious, they're driven, they're passionate. But I think what's interesting is when you have somebody who's been siloed their whole career, hasn't had the experience or the breadth that you've had in this situation, it's interesting to want for them to want to become an executive, because I feel like you have to experience and have really solid foundations in all the different areas of the business. And so, to me, one of the things that this perhaps has or will lead to for you is, right, this is like CEO training, this is COO training, probably at its best.
That's my hope. Yeah, right. That's my hope, Jeremy. It's my hope.
That will be the name. That will be the name of this episode. Vote Ryan for CEO.
Let's do the campaign.
I will start the campaign. Ryan, thank you for joining me. It's been a pleasure to chat about this. And any parting last words?
Nope. Jeremy, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you for tuning into the Platform Podcast. You can check out more episodes at marketplacerisk.com, along with information about our conferences, virtual events, and resources designed to help marketplaces and digital platforms successfully launch and grow. Don't forget to follow us on social media @MarketplaceRisk to stay up to date on upcoming programs, events, and important news.